Senator Daley. Good morning, members who are floating in, and for those in the audience today, other than this hearing, there's one other small thing going on, and that's the state budget forecast. I know there are briefings for members of the Senate going on right now, so we may have a little bit of in and out. So thank you for putting up with that. Let me just kind of outline real briefly my hopes for today. We have officially in front of the committee three bills, which to varying degrees, I'll ask others to tell you what the degrees are, but to varying degrees represent the kind of the meat of the governor's jobs initiatives this year, things that he's announced, things that he talked about in the State of the State. And so our hope today is to help identify areas where we can work together on some kind of a jobs package coming out of this session. A lot of work to do in the next month here, but we wanted to give the governor and his administration and the agencies involved and the legislators carrying these measures an opportunity to present, testimony and to have a little back and forth with members of the Jobs Committee. So I'm looking forward to today, and I appreciate people scrambling and driving through slush and crud and whatever else we want to call this. And we already have a substitute pinch hitter, so I will note and praise my friend Senator Metzen, who's already stepped up on behalf of Senator Scoy, who we keep trying to get to this committee and have trouble doing. But so Senator Metzen will help present Senator Scoy's bill, and then prior to that, as kind of an overview. For all of us, we've asked Kathy Thunheim to join us, and she can give you a little more about her background, but kind of a 20,000-foot view of jobs, the kind of things that the governor has been talking about and working on. So with that, members, we'll try to honor the noon departure time for this committee. We might end up going over a little bit, but my sense is we'll spend about half the time on the Scoy bill, and then we'll hear from Senator Sieben and Senator Eaton on their measures. So with that, I'd welcome Kathy Thunheim again to the Jobs Committee. You were with us last year at one point, and appreciate you continuing your work and connecting with us.
Thanks very much. Yes, thank you, Senator, Chair, and thank all of you. Yeah, that's exactly right, Senator. You were part of the welcoming committee to my volunteer assignment a year ago, volunteer and part-time assignment, and I appreciated that. And I appreciate the opportunity to come back on behalf of the administration and provide something, as you say, a 20,000-foot overview, and I hope a sense of progress. A year ago, what we were beginning was a period of intense listening to employers around the state, to employees and to unemployed Minnesotans, and to civic leaders around the state who were concerned about the state of Minnesota's economy and how it affected their responsibilities. The key questions we were looking to explore were what has happened, what has created what I think we all understood looking at the data was some stall out in Minnesota's capacity to create new jobs. We have an unemployment rate that is better than many, and we're appreciative of that. But when you get below that top line, the fact is our capacity and our track record of creating new jobs in the last 10 or 12 years has fallen significantly below other states' performance. And we were trying to understand what that was about. I think the governor understood from the beginning of taking office and asking me to take on my responsibility that private sector employment is the golden that's the goal. We all understand that this is about finding sustainable private sector employment. That is the key to economic vitality for the state. So that's what we were exploring. We spent a good part of the year, and I would conservatively say we met with more than 1,000 people, employers, employee groups, as I said, civic leaders around the state. The governor himself, as you know, convened 11, I think, community forums around the state. I and others from DEED and others in state administration conducted dozens and dozens more. We learned a lot, And last October 25th, the governor hosted a summit in St. Paul. It was an opportunity to bring together many of the people that we'd met and learned from along the way, but also to begin to play back to a broader constituency, including the legislature, what we'd heard, what we'd learned. More than 900 people attended the summit, more than half of them private sector employers or service providers to the private sector, bankers, and so on. We did share what we learned in year one, and we also began to lay out the areas for focused effort to improve Minnesota's competitiveness and also to try to get additional ideas and constructive advice from the attendees about some of our preliminary ideas. I would reinforce at that point, and I would say it again today, that as the governor has communicated numerous times, we're looking for his best ideas, our best ideas, your best ideas, the best ideas we can gather from around the state, and see if we can't find a way together to reignite Minnesota's capacity for job creation. Immediately after the summit, the governor issued seven initial priorities. They were priorities that formed the basis for much of the administration's work plan this year, although I would want to note that there were a number of other important ideas and initiatives that were reviewed at the summit, and they're not off the grid. Some of them are initiatives that can or should be led by the private sector, and we in the administration are simply monitoring and providing moral support. An example would be a real initiative to connect what we talked about at the summit as the 1099 culture that is growing in Minnesota. That is those who are not looking for a job, they're looking for work. They're contractors, they're freelancers, and we have many thousands of them that we probably don't have as good a handle on who they are, where they are. They're all over the state of Minnesota. We had testimonies from a number of them at the summit. It's an interesting aspect to our culture that we don't know as much about as we should. And so the private sector group is helping us figure out how to network with those people and learn more about that aspect of our emerging culture. Another example that's not on my list, but it's clearly one of the things that came out of the summit and continues to gain momentum, is a Branding Minnesota initiative that is moving forward as a public-private collaboration again. It's led by the Department of Tourism, but it involves dozens of Minnesota companies from the hospitality industry around the state, all interested in getting us back on offense as we think about how to promote Minnesota as a place to do business and to grow companies. But back to the governor's seven priorities, and I'll spend the last couple minutes I've got just outlining those, some of which specifically set up the discussion that I know you have in front of you relative to legislation. My way of summarizing the seven priorities is a little bit different than the governor's, and I'll just take I'll take the latitude I've got with the microphone to say it this way. I think we look at it and say, what's the role of state government in particular in a couple of different ways as we think about the issues of creating jobs? Because one of the things I will tell you as a private sector employer, my day job is that I'm a CEO of a global services company. You can't guilt the private sector into creating jobs. We don't do it out of the goodness of our heart. We do it because we've got demand for goods and services, and we believe in the companies that we're building, and we are willing to take risks and invest in more people. So one key area is what's happening to demand for Minnesota's goods and services, for the products and the services that are created in Minnesota. Are there things that we can or should be doing as a state government to affect that? And what we learned in all of our explorations around the state of Minnesota, that there might be a couple of areas. One relates directly to some of the biggest groups of unemployed people we have, those in the construction industry, those in the general contracting world, those in the architecture world. It's the whole subject of infrastructure. I think often here at the Capitol, infrastructure gets played as a jobs creation thing, and it certainly has that impact. I would tell you what we heard around the state of Minnesota from civic leaders and from businesses and employers is that infrastructure is a necessary foundation to build a vital economy. Products have to be able to get from point A to point B as efficiently as they do someplace else. Frankly, employees have to be able to get from point A to point B as efficiently as they want, or they're going to go someplace else. And I think the complacency that we've had in Minnesota historically, that we grow great people and they stay here, we really need to have our eyes wide open that the money is moving around the world in a much more transparent way. The barriers to money moving around are going down, and the barriers to talent moving are going down too. So infrastructure that allows us to be as competitive as every place else is essential. It has also, of course, the benefit of creating jobs in an industry, or in a sector, I should say, that desperately needs it. But another area where we think there's a role for government in helping affect demand is in the whole subject of export and foreign direct investment. It's my observation after a year of listening and trying to go to school on the subject of Minnesota's approach to this that we're one of the states that's frankly way behind in having a point of view about foreign direct investment. It's something that, in my opinion, as a private sector person, we should be sophisticated about, we should be proactive about. If there are investments around the world that are looking to have a beachhead in the United States of America, we should want them to be looking at Minnesota. We need to be on offense. We need to understand what the competitive environment is like for foreign direct investment. And that is something that the governor has challenged to the Minnesota Trade Office to take on, and we're in the early stages of doing some work to understand what is the competitive set and how should we, what are the range of options that we as a state should be looking at to think about foreign direct investment. In the same way, is there a role for us to help Minnesota manufacturers and, frankly, service providers to more effectively explore their potential to be global suppliers or even national suppliers exporting outside of Minnesota, in ways that allow us to measure progress by the creation of jobs in Minnesota. Some of you have heard me say this before. My own little company, based here in the Twin Cities, but 60% of my revenue comes from outside the United States. We work for clients around the world. Now, I've made a decision to have all the jobs that I create created here. And I think the question becomes, how many other companies based in Minnesota have not had the opportunity or taken the opportunity to think about what their market of interest might be and how might it affect their potential to create jobs here in Minnesota? Again, the Trade Office is being asked to help us be more strategic about that and more to come on that topic, and we'd be happy to talk about it. A second area that we learned a lot about in our year of listening was, in fact, if I put these in the order of how many times we heard about it or how serious the issue was, this would have been number one, and it is access to capital. For those companies who do feel demand, who are looking to expand or maybe have an idea and are looking to start, it needs to be understood that the traditional ways that companies or entrepreneurs accessed capital in order to create jobs and create successful organizations in Minnesota, those sources of access to capital have dried up. It's not unique to Minnesota, but it's as difficult here as it is anywhere. And again, the fact of the matter is, in other places in the world, in other states, there are significant, sophisticated efforts to figure out what's the next generation of capital formulation for private sector starting to look like. If we think we're going to wait for the banking industry to sort itself out globally and then nationally and then regionally in order for people who've got businesses that are looking for capital to get in line and wait for capital, we're going to be way, way behind. And so last June, the governor assembled a mostly private sector group. They represent banking, both community and large and sophisticated. They represent private equity. They represent venture capital. We made sure there were actually a couple of members who had also served on Governor Pawlenty's 21st Century Tax Commission. We thought it was important to bring the continuity of all of that work that had been done. And they have spent considerable amounts of time providing reports back to the governor relative to these issues around how do we create access to capital. The governor's taken steps, and some of those, as you know, we have some other pieces in the puzzle and or in the sequence, and would be happy to talk about those. But lots of work continues around access to capital. The third area we learned a lot about, and the governor set out as a key area for work, is impacting the cost of doing business in Minnesota. And again, as you all know, this is a place where the legislature and the governor agreed quickly a year ago that we could do better in reducing unnecessary regulation and in looking at all kinds of aspects of reforming the delivery of government services. Lots of good work there, and we can, again, talk about the detail of that, but it's important to acknowledge that we know that this business of making sure we're competitive as a place to do business is a priority for all of us. And lastly, we learned a lot, and coming out of the summit, there was a lot of visibility around the last issue, and that was, do we have a workforce ready to meet the demand for jobs going forward? And the answer we learned is that we have some work to do, that we make considerable investments here in workforce development, both at the state level and in our educational institutions, and yet we have a misalignment. We have 168,000, I might be a little off on the numbers, 168,000 Minnesotans actively looking for work, and yet tens of thousands of jobs that employers say they can't find anybody to fill. That's an unacceptable reality, and I think the governor's made it clear and has tasked the deed commissioner, Mark Phillips, who's here, but also has asked MNSCU and the other educational institutions to participate fully in helping us rethink the answers to the questions about the workforce for the future. I would simply close by echoing again something that I know the governor has shared with you before, that it's our hope that we can take the best ideas we've got gleaned from around the state of Minnesota, the best ideas that you have from your explorations, and together put together a jobs program for Minnesota that serves the people of Minnesota well. So I appreciate the chance to be here.
Thank you, Ms. Tunheim, and I appreciate you kind of giving that 20,000-foot view, and I hope you'll take it back directly to the governor that we absolutely want to identify many of those areas that we can work on together in the next month, work on together in a bipartisan fashion. I was particularly my ears perked up when you talk about the cost of doing business, and you know that's one of our priorities, is particularly with the statewide business property tax. So we'll get into that some more as we talk about the legislation. I hope you can stay this morning for as long as you can, and there may be some more conversations and questions for you. But let me steer things over to my friend and colleague Senator Metzen, and remind members again that Senator Metzen has agreed at the last minute here to pinch hit for Senator Skoy. And I don't know if Senator Skoy is afraid of our committee members, but we'll treat Senator Metzen nicely as we always do. And so Senator Metzen is
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I got quite an advance notice of this presentation
about 17 and a half minutes ago.
But I think Ms. Tunheim did an excellent job of an overview of the initiatives of the governor. And what I'm bringing forward on behalf of Senator Skoy is one piece of the puzzle. I see on the agenda after this one, there will be two more pieces. I believe there's seven pieces of the governor's budget. So today I think you're looking at three. So, and this one is 1768, which is the governor's 2012 jobs bill now. And most of it deals with taxes, and the one this committee is most concerned about, I guess, would be the jobs tax credit part of it. And I'm going to let Commissioner Franz kind of go through the bill that I looked at 20 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago, and he could give you the targets and how it works and so forth and so on. And we'll turn it over, if you don't mind, to Commissioner Franz.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. And again, for members, so we had tried to identify working with the governor's office exactly which pieces of legislation were the governor's jobs initiatives and part of the administration priorities. So we'll hear about Senate File 1768 now. And I also want to note that at one point we had Senator Kielash's bill on for today, and at Senator Kielash's request, we've pulled that for now. But I hope we can get back into that, Senator Kielash, at some point.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. There's some language issues there.
Okay, very good. So, Commissioner Franz, we welcome you to the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the opportunity and members to be before this committee. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Myron Franz, Commissioner of Revenue, and I want to thank Senator Metzen for stepping in and helping introduce this. And I thought he was going to go through the technical part of the bill, but I guess I'll do that instead.
Thank you very much.
And also want to thank Senator Skoy, who could not be here today, for his sponsoring the bill so that we could get this in play and present this to the governor, present this on behalf of the governor. And
Mr. Chairman,
I want to start off by saying,
hang on, Commissioner Franz, as is the custom of this committee, sometimes we get a little Our members like to jump in, and there's a particular member who loves to do that, and it's Senator Tomasoni. And we usually let him do that. So Senator Tomasoni, I think, has a welcome.
I appreciate that. I think that was like a respectful thing we just did, so I appreciate that. But since Senator Skoy's name keeps getting thrown around here, I figured I better tell everybody why he's not here. His daughter has just returned from Afghanistan, and he went out to San Diego to meet her, and so that's the reason he's not here. So
San Diego.
It's a very good reason why he's not here. It's not that he's afraid of the committee.
And Commissioner Franz, again, before Senator Tomassoni raises his hand, and just to be clear for you and others in the room, we'd asked you to focus on, again, the Jobs Now tax credit piece of the bill. There are a couple of other pieces with it, and I just note that affiliate nexus provision, the e-fairness, is something that we will take in front of this committee as soon as next week. So we're trying to give you less to do today so that you can focus more on that tax credit, Commissioner Franz. So, again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to take those off the discussion table for now, just those are the ways that the governor has recommended that we pay for these credits is through the affiliate nexus and a slight reduction in the FOC foreign royalty payments. But we'll leave that for another day. But it is important to note that we do fully fund the jobs credit. I think the main thing that I want to start off on is following up on what Senior Advisor Thunheim has told us, and that is that this recovery is a delicate recovery, and every piece of good news is obviously good news, but they're all pieces, and we are really concerned, and the governor has really looked at the slow job recovery as part of this economic recovery as one of the key elements that is really a difficult one. We have 168,000 Minnesotans who are still looking for employment, and we want to make sure that we do everything we can immediately to help create opportunities for job creation in 2012 and in the first part of 2013. So with that focus in mind, let me talk a little bit about the credit and why we targeted certain groups. The Jobs Now tax credit is focused on immediate job creation. It would provide businesses with a $3,000 tax credit for each unemployed Minnesotan, veteran, or recent graduate hired in calendar year 2012, and it would provide a $1,500 tax credit for new hires through June 30, 2013. This $35 million initiative would create potentially 14,000 jobs. As we all know, when the Great Recession hit Minnesota, it really hit the veterans and students disproportionately. And as a result, they have some really significant long-term unemployment problems. The Governor Jobs Now credit targets the credits to Minnesotans who need it the most, veterans, students, and those who are unemployed. So the tax credit is targeted to unemployed veterans who have been in active military service after September 11, 2001. They must have been discharged during the five-year period prior to the date hired and received unemployment for at least 4 weeks during the prior date to hire. For post 9/11 veterans, the unemployment rate is over 50% higher than the state average for the entire labor force. And for the combat brigade, the Red Bulls, who will be returning in May, the estimated unemployment rate is as high as 20%. Now, for the unemployed, the credit targets those who have been on unemployment insurance for at least 3 months immediately prior to the date of hire, or they have exhausted their eligibility under the unemployment insurance. Today, in all, we have over 130,000 Minnesotans who are receiving unemployment. Now, we've targeted recent graduates in 2001 from high school or from a certified college program degree or a certificate degree from a community college. There are potentially 93,000 students who received college degrees in the 2009-2010 school year, and there are estimated to be over 100,000 that will occur in 2014. I don't think any of us, when we graduated from college, faced the kind of unemployment situation that current graduates, high school graduates, community college graduates, or college graduates face right now. The Jobs Now credit is temporary and it's limited. It's limited to $50,000 per business, and it will expire on June 30, 2013. Now, the employers who seek to apply for the credit, we will develop an online application process so that as soon as they make the hire, they can apply for the credit online and receive a temporary approval so that they will know that if they satisfy the requirements of the job credit, that they will, in fact, receive the $3,000 credit. Now, the tentative credit applications are limited to no more than 16 employees in 2012 and 33 employees in 2013 for each employer. As I mentioned earlier, the number of Minnesotans that are currently unemployed, about 168,000, need to find work. And as Governor Dayton mentioned in his State of the State address, he profiled two brave Minnesotans, Mr. Steve Jackson, who served in the U.S. Army for 15 years, and Mr. Jack Marshall, who served in 6 years in the Air Force and was in Kuwait. He profiled these as two examples of individuals we simply cannot forget to respond and provide some opportunities. We really want to make sure that their employment is our number one priority. Now, the $3,000 tax credit will help businesses and business owners who are considering hiring additional employees. It will provide the incentive to do so in 2012 or in early 2013. We, I think, have a small business owner who would like to testify today. But as a previous small business owner and operator, I can tell you from personal experience, the $3,000 is enough for a small employer to take a look at and decide that if they're considering hiring and they need the job, that this would facilitate doing it immediately and in a way that would really, I think, satisfy the credit. Not everyone will seek to exercise the decision to apply for the credit, obviously, but it is something that I think small businesses will consider. Economists have seen job creation tax credits as a very important part of an economic recovery package. According to two senior economists, Timothy Bartik and John Bishop, the jobs tax credit should be a key part of the policy mix, if for no other reason than it is especially effective when compared to other tax breaks that are offered to businesses in the name of job creation. Its effectiveness stems from its straightforward design. Businesses only get the credit if they increase their payrolls, either through adding jobs, adding hours, or raising wages. Its effectiveness also makes its net costs cheap. In short, it belongs in a legislative effort in the near term to create jobs. End of quote. Now, job credits have been important tools in a lot of other states. Over 35 states now have different kinds of job credits that are part of their package. In California, over $75 million has been expanded from their new jobs tax credit for the last since 2009. They estimate that they put to work over 25,000 Californians. In Florida, the Jobs for the Unemployed tax credit program provides incentives to businesses throughout Florida to hire qualified employees who were previously unemployed. The businesses may receive a tax credit of $1,000 for every employee hired as of a date back in 2010. When fully expanded, this program would help to create 10,000 new jobs in Florida. In Maryland, the Job Creation and Recovery Tax Credit allows qualified employers hiring qualified residents to claim a refundable tax credit of up to $5,000 per employee or a maximum of $250,000 per employer. The program was capped at $20 million and expected to help create 4,000 jobs. And finally, in Illinois, the governor announced an increase in the Illinois Veterans Tax Credit allowable credit from $1,200 to $5,000 per veteran hired. He is hoping to ensure all veterans have a job as their deployment ends. The program in Illinois is just getting started. While small, it has grown exponentially since it was its inception in 2010. These are just a few examples of other states across the country that have utilized these tax credits. And I think one of the last things I want to cover before we open it up for questions is the impact that jobs have on revenue in the state of Minnesota. I believe there's a handout that the committee should have received talking about the number of jobs mattered. There's two pages or two charts. Now, this chart, that's the one, Mr. Chair. This chart is a snapshot of the end of 2011, so it doesn't have the current unemployment numbers. And we know that the employment situation in Minnesota has continued to improve, and we know that Minnesota continues to outperform the rest of the country. But the first chart that shows that there was an increase in about 4.7% in our jobs from 2004 to 2008. And it shows that, unfortunately, in the recession, there was about a 5.7% decrease in the number of jobs. Now, the bar on the right shows that we're increasing since that we've bottomed out, and actually those numbers have now been increased even more. But if you go to the next page, the next chart that shows the jobs matter to the state budget, this shows you some of the real effect that the jobs or and job growth has on our revenue system in Minnesota. So if you look at the chart that shows the 4.7 increase that we had from 2004 to 2008, well, you can see that when we had that increase, there was about a 5% increase in sales tax revenue. And there's about a 23% in income tax revenue and about a 92% in the corporate tax revenue. On the flip side, obviously, when you look at the 5.7% jobs lost after the recession hit, you see that we had a 9% decrease in the sales tax, a 17% decrease in the income tax revenue, and a 46% decrease in the corporate income tax revenue. This simply highlights that how critical jobs are for the recovery of Minnesota's budget situation and for our long-term stability in Minnesota in terms of providing revenue that can fund government. So with that, Chair, I'd be glad to stand for questions and comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I do have a couple members with questions, I know. And I appreciate you finishing with your charts and the emphasis on how important it is that we get our private sector economy thriving and moving again. And I think that's really why we come here every day. What can we do to help? What can the state government do to help make that happen? And you could argue that what's being reported today with the state budget forecast, we're up again, right? Another $300 million as reported by our friends in the media. So maybe a little bit of economic recovery going on. And what can we do to keep that moving, to keep that going? So I guess one general question for you, and I know you'll face this again in the tax committee, but I give you credit, first of all, credit and then a question. The credit is that this legislation is paid for, that the tax credit portion of this bill is paid for, but it's paid for with a tax increase. And could you explain a little bit the rationale behind that? I worry that, as you point out, the economy is fragile. So why would we want to step on it with a tax increase at the same time as we're trying to, again, create these new job opportunities? So if you can talk a little bit about that FOC measure. There's the folks at this table are familiar with it, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. But I'm sure it'll be a source of further controversy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that the governor and I have talked a lot about, and this is going to open up a little bit of the discussion about tax expenditures in general. And you don't want to get me started on that because we'll be here for another couple of hours. But it is.
Metzen will stop you.
But it is. You know, it is.
I want to point out that his testimony, I prepared that a couple of days ago. That was pretty thorough, I thought.
I forgot to mention that. Thank you, Senator. But it is true. It is true. And I think part of the issue, when you look at your characterization as the reduction in the FOC and foreign royalty as a tax increase, part of what we look at when the governor and I talk about tax reform and tax fairness is trying to put every corporation, every business on equal footing. So one of the things, and that's true of the affiliate nexus as well, one of the things that we look to when we look at expenditures is, wouldn't it be more effective if, in fact, we could eliminate more of these expenditures and these hidden credits and deductions so that every business paid the same basic rate? And so we look at it, frankly, as a tax fairness program to make sure that all businesses doing business in Minnesota can have the same level playing field and they have the same opportunity to make money in Minnesota, which we want them to do. And so our proposal in utilizing the FOC and the foreign royalty haircut, I'll say, is that it would provide the right kind of movement that we think we need to take a look at all expenditures, all preferential treatment for corporations, and try to level the playing field whenever we can.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think we're going to need to be clear, though, that this absolutely means higher taxes for some important Minnesota companies and job creators, and so the discussion will continue. I have Senator Howe and then a couple others here. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, if you look on page 3 of the bill at line 3.27, I'm just wondering, it says in 2011 was awarded, and I'm wondering why we're limited to just 2011, why that doesn't say in 2011 or after, because we've got a lot of college grads, VOTEC, and high school graduates that are going to be coming online here this spring, and I'm just wondering why we wouldn't want them to advertise that they might qualify for a Jobs Now tax credit when they're applying to different various businesses.
Mr. Franz.
Chair, Senator, that's an excellent question, and it's all about priorities. Obviously, to the extent we could have opened it up for before 2011 and after 2011, we would have liked to have done that. But we felt in trying to target the most recent graduate pool from 2011 who are still unemployed look in 2012, we felt that was the best group to target. There could be some flexibility in that number. The question becomes difficult in terms of opening up the credit to such a large group that it costs a lot more money, but it's a legitimate question. I actually have a son that qualifies for the 2011, and that's not why we wrote it that way. But no, it's a legitimate question. It's one that we can certainly discuss. It was one about priorities.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would just say that I wouldn't want to have a company get caught into you're the best candidate, but you're not going to bring me the $3,000 credit. And I think in the spirit of it, you would want to open that up to current grads, to people that are looking for it. So thank you for being willing to look at that.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Commissioner, I want to publicly thank you, your department, and the governor for your work on income tax reciprocity and working toward a new agreement with the state of Wisconsin. I think that is extremely important, so thank you for that. My question pertaining to the bill, we're seeing this 14,000 jobs, and I believe in your testimony you mentioned that that this legislation could potentially create up to 14,000 jobs in the state of Minnesota. I realize that that's what the funding is available for, but how do you come up with the number? How are we going to create those jobs? How did you come up with the number in your testimony?
Mr. Franz.
Chair, Senator, that's an estimate of the number. We assume that there would be a number of folks who would qualify in 2012 for the $3,000 credit and some folks who would qualify in 2013 at the $1,500 tax credit level. So it's a combination of estimating the number of job applications that would be received and would ultimately qualify. So it was an estimate on that basis of those 2 years.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. So it's an estimate on how many Minnesotans would qualify, not necessarily how many jobs would be created. Is that correct?
Mr. Franz.
Chair, Senator, we believe that there would be the number of jobs, 14,000 jobs would be created.
Created. Okay. Thank you.
Boy, Senator Miller's being pretty easy on you. I don't think I'm clear as to how you connect this to how do you get to that estimate? Maybe Ms. Tunheim was grinding her teeth on that one a little bit, too.
No. I think it's the notion that when we work in collaboration with the private sector to try to understand what job expansion might look like based on people's forecasts, and I think what the commissioner is talking about is then taking that insight and trying to map it against eligibility.
Yeah, and so Senator Miller and I have had conversation on this before, and I'll give him the microphone again in a sec, but maybe part of it is just since this idea has been promoted, I can say until today, I haven't heard from any employers who said, hey, we're going to use this. We're excited about this. And so that might be a part of our skepticism about does this really work, because we don't have any job creators coming to our offices saying this is what we want, that this $3,000 or this $1,500 is going to make a difference when we go through our budgets and we decide we're going to take a chance and we're going to risk and invest more. So I don't know if that's where you were going, Senator Miller, but
yeah,
Senator
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I was just going to add another question is what have the conversations been with the business community? And
sure.
And again, my priority, I think the priority of this committee and all the members around this table are jobs in the economy. There's no doubt about it. But the question is, how do we create those jobs, and what's the best approach to do that?
Ms. Turner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator, what I would say is, and I had this conversation briefly with the chair as we were getting started, and he told me my line is going to be popular with at least a couple of you, because if we've learned one thing is that there is no one silver bullet here. We have the need.
So
I'm told that I'm quoting Senator Daley.
Senator Daley should have stayed in.
Yeah, it's
BBs
or
something.
It's too bad that it's a throwaway line, because it's a really, really important piece of the reality that we need to keep coming back to. We have a diverse economy in Minnesota. That's good news. What's been challenging in this last period is that so many sectors of our diverse economy have been struggling because of the nature of the global recession, because of the nature of the meltdown, if I can call it that, of the financial services sector for a period. And so in conversation, in specific answer to the senator's question, in discussions with small businesses around the state of Minnesota, and I have to say, I don't know if this is unique to Minnesota, but it's certainly true in Minnesota. When we're out talking to small business people around the state of Minnesota, they are also civic leaders in their communities. They are also people who are thinking about the veterans who are going to be coming back to their communities. And they're willing to be part of the solution. What they're looking for are people to be in conversation with them about innovative ways to try to get on the same page and move forward in ways that create economic vitality for the people in their communities and for their companies. And my way of looking at this is one tool that would be good to have in our toolbox as we try together to build Minnesota's future going forward. I don't think it's the answer to everything. I don't think it's going to be compelling to some large employers. But do I think on main streets around the state of Minnesota there are some small businesses who will cause them to say, let me think differently about the way I was going to build my company going forward, and if I can help solve a broader community problem, sign me up.
Senator Miller, are you looking to follow up? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up, and I can't agree with you more, and I think that is unique to Minnesota, and
we're lucky.
We're very fortunate, and I just want to repeat myself that I think it's the goal of this committee. It's certainly my goal to work with the departments, the administration, to do everything we can to promote job growth and economic recovery. This is one piece of the puzzle. Another important piece, and speaking as a small business owner, one of the major factors in determining when we're going to hire someone is if the demand is there. If we're
Absolutely.
Busy, we're going to bring on more people, whether or not this credit
Absolutely.
Is there or not. So
right.
That's the other piece of the puzzle that that I look forward to continuing to work on.
Ms. Tunheim.
Chairman, I think Ms. Tunheim put it just right. This isn't designed, in my opinion, for General Mills or 3M. I mean, this is for the small business person on the streets down there, and I believe the small business community provides, 70% of the jobs. So I think that's certainly what we're targeting here today. And
Ms. Tunheim, and I just to note, I've got 6 or 7 members who still want to ask some kind of question, and I'll
shut up now, Mr. Chair.
All I wanted to do was acknowledge the senator's comment about demand and acknowledge that he's one of those who took it upon himself to join the trade mission and go to Korea and learn about our challenges related to building export. So thank you. I want to thank him for that.
Yeah. Senator Miller's probably been a busy guy.
Yeah. You know.
Childbirth, too. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had two lines that I kind of wanted to have you give some more information on. One had to do with competition. And Commissioner Franz, I really appreciate your comments on making sure that our businesses are competitive. And you mentioned, I believe, that reducing the FOC deduction and foreign royalty subtraction would make all businesses within Minnesota on an equal playing field, having equal competitive advantage. And my concern is getting new jobs in Minnesota from other states, particularly, or developing, creating new jobs. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how this proposal in regards to its FOCs and foreign royalty proposals, how that would position us with other states. I'm particularly thinking about our large employers who have multi-state presence, and we would need to make very sure that we do not do something that would encourage them to be in a different state where it's more economically competitive for them to be in another state. So if you could speak to that a bit, please.
And Commissioner Franz, Senator Nelson spends a lot of time watching the IBM facility down her way in Rochester, so you might want to sprinkle that in with your answer. Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you for the recommendation, Mr. Chair. The, you know, one of the things that that we need to remember is that for every tax expenditure that's there, it really is a tax increase for all the other businesses. So there is a trade-off, and we were talking about reducing this particular benefit to certain corporations, but the fact that it's there causes other corporations to have to pay more. The rate has to be a little bit higher to generate the same kind of income. So there is a trade-off. Now, you're clearly correct in the sense that the credit for the foreign operating companies and the foreign royalty payments is by far claimed by out-of-state corporations, not Minnesota corporations. And it's been that way for a long time.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I just have to clarify.
Senator.
But when you say out-of-state corporations, they're providing jobs in Minnesota, though. We're talking about Minnesota jobs, right?
Yes.
Mr. Franz.
Yes, Chair, Senator, absolutely. And so what we try to do, when we look at a tax policy, we want it to be neutral in terms of and fair for all companies. But we do obviously want to make sure that there's an incentive, continuing to be an incentive for employers, whether they're located outside of Minnesota or inside Minnesota, to add jobs in Minnesota, because that's the whole purpose of this credit, is to give a credit for a job that's created in Minnesota. And so that would apply to, although Senator Metzen mentioned, this is designed a lot for smaller companies. The large companies can take advantage of this as well, and we would assume that they will. I mean, their tax departments are very sophisticated, very smart, and they'll see this opportunity and utilize it to a potentially $50,000 credit for such companies as IBM or anybody outside the state.
Senator Nelson.
Just to follow up. Well, I didn't hear an exact answer to my question about how this proposal will place us as far as competitiveness for Minnesota jobs for these companies that you're increasing, that this proposal would increase taxes on. And if you don't know that right off at the top of your head, I understand, but maybe you could follow up with me. I'd like to know where this would place us in lines with competitiveness with other states. And then my second line of questioning is just kind of more of a comment, which I think what you're saying is that the need to have having a tax credit or reducing the tax burden, in this case, of this proposal actually increases jobs. In other words, it allows job creators to have more money to hire. And I agree with that totally. My thought is, though, that if that, and I'm glad we all agree on that, would not it make more sense to reduce taxes across the board then, rather than just in a particular kind of a micromanaging area?
Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, Senator, really excellent points. And I think one of the things when the governor looks at the overall state of Minnesota and the current budget situation, you know, we obviously have to fund the government at a certain level, and to simply, you know, lower taxes without some requirement, as in this case, there is a definite requirement that if you want the credit, you've got to hire someone and they have to work for a year. So right now, we're focusing on the jobs portion of the recovery for Minnesota, and that's why this particular credit was focused on that. In terms of looking at the overall tax structure and Minnesota's competitiveness with other states, I think that's a bigger discussion and a very important one. In fact, that's part of what the governor has charged me with our tax reform initiative, is to talk to businesses, legislators, and find out what are those elements that we think are the most important for being being competitive with other states, and also competitive globally. As the senator knows, we have to not just attract companies within the United States, we have to attract companies from around the globe to come to Minnesota. And so I think that's part of the discussion about our complex corporate code, our complex property tax, our complex individual tax, and the relatively high rates that we have, that are the statutory rates that are higher than what the effective rates really are in some cases, puts us at a disadvantage, frankly, in positioning Minnesota to be more competitive, because sometimes people don't drill down to find out, well, what is the really effective rate in Minnesota? Sometimes they just look at the statutory rate and they might write us off. And I think that does put us at a competitive disadvantage. And so I think the discussion I want to have with all of you as we go forward, not just on this jobs credit, but just generally for Minnesota to be competitive, how do we restructure our taxes so that they're more compelling and they're more understandable, and the rates are something that we have a better chance, I think, of competing around the globe with?
Thank you. Just, Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, I look forward to working with you on what I would call a smarter tax, tax policy. So thank you.
Thank you. So, members, I'm going to recognize everyone who wants to ask a question here, but I also want to honor our commitments to Senator Sieben and Senator Eaton, who are in the back of the room. So I'd like to kind of move from the Metz and Scoy bill in the next 5 or 10 minutes here, and then make sure just allow these folks to get everything on the table. So with that in mind, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was going to use the tool in the toolbox phrase, but since Ms. Tunheim already used it, I won't repeat that.
Great minds think alike.
Yes. There were several questions asked of the commissioner, and I think he answered some of them, and one of them was, why would we be doing this? And they're doing it in several other states, and it's working. And maybe one of the reasons that you're not hearing from business about it is because they don't believe you're going to pass it, and so they don't think it's going to become a reality. But I will tell you that we have some very real experience with a program like this on the Iron Range, where we gave $3,000 credits to companies to hire people, and I think the number is over 1,000 people are working and have been working for over 5 or 6 years because of a program like this. So we know it works. And I find it really, really appropriate that Senator Scoey is in San Diego meeting his daughter, who is coming back from deployment. And one of the groups that this bill will employ is unemployed veterans or unemployed military people who are coming back from their deployments. And I'm not sure if she needs a job or not, but it's pretty interesting that who we're targeting are people who don't have jobs in the military, who have come back from fighting for this country, kids that are graduating from college who can't find jobs, and unemployed people, because the unemployed people will tell you that when they're unemployed for a year, businesses look at them and say, "You haven't worked for a year. You know, we don't know if we want you now." And so this is targeting people that need jobs and need to get back to work. And, we have a budget forecast coming out today. I don't know what it's going to say. There might be $31 million floating around there. I'm not sure if there is or not. But, Mr. Chairman, I have to paraphrase something that you said when we had the business property tax here in the committee, and it wasn't paid for. This one is paid for, but it wasn't paid for. And you said something to the effect of it's 0.1% of our budget, and if we can't find that kind of money around here, then we're not doing our jobs. So that along with this one, we should be able to find this money regardless of whether or not we do the FOCs. And I think the FOCs is something we should definitely be doing. But this bill will go a long way to creating jobs. And if you're wondering where the 14,000 came from, it's simple math, okay?
Senator Tomasoni, I think you paraphrased me pretty accurately. I said we should be able to find it here at the state legislature, not from job creators' budgets and pockets and pocketbooks and wallets. So there's a difference on where you're finding.
No. What I'm pointing out to you, Mr. Chairman, is that this is paid for through the FOCs. However, if you don't want to do the FOCs and it's just an expense to the state budget, then we
still be able
then,
to find
then
it.
your quote is very
We're
appropriate.
Working together. Okay. Excellent. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Frantz, one of the things that that I think reduces the cost of this is the fact that if we get these people off the unemployment rolls, we'll reduce that. And also, if they're back to work, they're also starting to pay taxes. I don't know if any of those numbers were considered as part of the overall cost or the overall savings to the state as these folks get back to work. I view this as an opportunity for businesses to take some of the risk out of hiring somebody. They hire people because they think that they're going to make them money through their productivity on the job. So, you know, this takes some of the risk out of hiring somebody. And hopefully, in the case of Senator Miller's you know, you need to increase demand. Some new employees can help increase demand for you as well. So I think, you know, they can go out and find business or whatever. But could you just, you know, get to the, you know, is there any consideration for new tax revenues because these folks are employed, or less cost because they're no longer using unemployment or other government services as they get back to work?
Commissioner Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Senator, well, that's an excellent question. And obviously, one of the reasons why we wanted to structure and design this tax credit was to make it as simple as possible so that the average small business person could read about it in the paper and go, yes, I qualify, or no, I don't. And then the follow-up on that is we didn't include that in our revenue estimate, but one of the reasons we wanted to have the year-long requirement for the job was that, in essence, after a year or so, it will start paying for itself. You reduce unemployment. You have someone who's employed and who's paying taxes. So there is a net benefit, but it's not something that's considered in the revenue estimate. But it is part of our consideration.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Franz, a concern I have as an employer myself with 75 employees, have you looked at this at all in regards to employment law? I'm wondering, as an employer, if I choose to hire a recent college grad instead of a 50-year-old person to drive a forklift, I'm wondering how that 50-year-old applicant, who's maybe just as good and have a lot more experience, how they're going to respond to me as an employer, you know, if I'm hiring a recent college grad to get that credit.
Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, Senator. Well, I think one of the things that in terms of job credit opportunities and targeting unemployed or unemployed veterans, clearly that preference provides such a financial preference. And the employer, you know, this is clearly a situation where the employer has to make the right call for themselves and their business. As you said, as a business person, you know that you need if you need someone to operate a forklift, you need someone who knows how to do that and to do that well. So I think that in terms of the decision of the employer, this leaves that decision up to them as it should, and they have to make that determination. The credit simply is available for certain categories of people.
Senator Peterson.
So, Commissioner, is it the governor's position he would still want employers to hire the best person related to this incentive?
Mr. Franz.
Chair, Senator, absolutely. That's one of the challenges in designing a tax credit is to provide the opportunity to provide the incentive but not get in the way of a small business person making their decision. They've got to make the right call. I mean, it's their business, and they need to know. They know who they need to hire. As a small business person, I can tell you that we always looked at the right person, even if there's a tax credit available for a particular reason. We would look. You've got to have the right people for the right job. So clearly we want them to do that.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question that might be related to this or not, Commissioner and Ms. Thunheim. First, I really appreciate that you have a formula before us that is paid for. I think that is a critical thing that we have not been doing in this committee. Yesterday, we had a proposal from Senator Sanjom that provided a tax exemption on businesses, huge businesses, and there was a property tax, sales tax, and transportation tax exemption that would cost about 100 times the cost of this bill. And there was absolutely no questioning as to how do we pay for it. Yet we are questioning right now how do we pay for this small program. So I do appreciate the sincerity and the effort of the governor to say, you know, whatever we propose for job creators, we actually need to pay for that. We need to come up with the money to do it. So based on that, my question is more, it seems to me that every time we talk about tax increase, tax reform, tax one versus the other, we engage in this conversation, and you're going to have a hard time passing these. From the questions, you can see that, you know, there is really not support here. So my question to you is, next we have a bill that is being brought before us by Senator Sieben, which is a $10 million proposal for investment funds. And my question to you, as people who have worked, really have extensive background on one versus the other, it just seems to me that if I am going to work with the governor and try to move forward an agenda to create jobs and provide incentives for business growth, that's where I want to put most of my energy. And so it's kind of an unfair question because it's a proposal that you bring before us, you know, that is a tool in the box, like you describe it, and I agree, you know, we need every tool at our disposal. But for a senator that has mixed feelings as to how the conversation kind of disintegrates when we talk about taxes, does it make sense that we put all of this energy into small or big proposals that really, at the end of the day, are not very practical? Am I off by saying that? Or I would like to know your thoughts behind one versus the other. I would like to put an emphasis on building an effort to extend, to grow capital investment. And that's where I want to put my energy. But convince me that we're doing the right thing by putting this tool before us.
Chairman, Commissioner Phillips is wondering if he can probably address the senator on this one.
Absolutely.
And he'll introduce him. Yeah.
And Senator Torres-Ray, we do want to bring up Senator Seaman to talk about her bill. I think this is a good preview for it. But so Commissioner Phillips to Senator Torres-Ray's issue.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Phillips, Commissioner Adeed, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk. I think the toolbox analogy is very appropriate here. And I just want to point out a couple of things from experience that we've had coming out of several recessions in Minnesota. I've been involved in economic development programs for nearly 30 years. And when you need the tools, is usually the businesses are making expansion decisions and employment hiring decisions when we're coming out of these recessions. And then typically we see plateauing and there's not much hiring going on and not much investment activity. So we're trying to load the toolbox at the appropriate time. Obviously, coming out of a recession, it's the most difficult time to pay for the programs. So I think we're trying to, you know, have very modest proposals that we can afford at the appropriate time. So we can get into the other bill. I don't want to, you know, take the committee's time with all that. But so the governor considered many proposals, some of which came from legislators, some came out of Deed, some came out of Department of Revenue of ideas. And we came across ones that he could support and find ways to pay for. And but I think the key thing is, well, maybe I could just do a quick anecdote to maybe describe this. I was up in Fergus Falls at a metal laser cutting.
How quick is it, Commissioner Phillips?
Pardon me?
Is it really quick?
Real quick.
Okay, thank you.
The business owner, I asked them how we're doing. We're coming out of the recession. Revenues and sales are back to pre-recession levels. I asked about employment. He said, not yet, because I'm afraid, because there's a debt ceiling crisis. There's a continuing resolution in Washington. There's a state shutdown. We're worried about a double-dip recession. Well, now we're not hearing as much about that, and the economy's creeping out. Again, this guy's going to make a decision, and we're trying to push him to make that decision and hire those people by saying, you know, the time is right. If you do it by the end of the year, we'll give you a $3,000 tax credit. So, you know, this is a lot of this is timing and doing the right thing at the right time. So I'll leave it with that.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Phillips and Commissioner Franz for being here and Senator Metzen for bringing forward this bill. I was just doing a little bit of easy elementary grade math. So the $3,000 credit, the employee would need to be paid about $25,000 a year. That's about a 12% savings to the job creator. Is that about right? And really my question is, do we feel we've had a lot of discussion in this committee about the direct line between bills that we're working on and creating jobs, and do we feel that this will create jobs?
Mr. Chair and Senator, you know, that was the direct charge from the governor was try to design a tax credit that people can use immediately and will go directly to the bottom line and will provide an incentive for jobs in 2012 and in early 2013. Now, clearly, one of the things that might happen, Senator, is that as we move down the road and look at the response to this particular credit and see what's happening, maybe there are some things we should adjust, or maybe we'll want to continue it after 2013. But we felt obligated to, A, pay for this. We felt obligated to, B, make sure it was a defined, specific time frame to find out what the response is. I mean, one of the things we'll be able to do is study this as we go through and at the end decide how effective it was or whether we should have done it a little bit differently. But it was designed specifically to get at that decision where that $3,000 matters, and it matters right now. And it's a refundable credit, so it goes to their bottom line.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair. So what as I understand this, and I think there's much consensus around the table about creating jobs, tactics or effort or direction has been a little bit different throughout the year and a half that we've been here. But what I'm hearing is that a credit creates jobs, that reducing taxes creates jobs. And last year, as we were going through negotiations with the governor, and I had the honor of participating in some of those conversations, he and I had conversations about raising taxes and the impact of that on the state of Minnesota. And my argument with the governor was, if we raise taxes, we will limit job growth in the state of Minnesota. And he felt that the job creators would still invest in Minnesota, that they would create jobs on their own. So I'm very glad to hear and proud that I can agree with the governor today that he believes that a credit will create jobs in Minnesota. I don't know if I had an influence on him after that, after those discussions, or something else. But honestly, credits will create jobs. We all believe that. And conversely, raising taxes will reduce jobs because businesses will not invest. They will pay down their debt. They will do other things with their capital. But if we take away credits, or if we reduce, you know, if we raise taxes, then we're going to limit job growth in the state of Minnesota. And Senator Tomassoni said this works. We know it works. I agree with you, Senator Tomassoni. Senator Kielash, you said that this puts people back to work and it will save the state money. And I agree with you that it will save the state money if we can put people back to work. But credits work and raising taxes do not. And I agree with the governor on that statement.
Commissioner Frank.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think one of the things I want to really clarify is that I think, as we all know, that it's really the businesses, and ultimately it's the consumers that create the jobs. It's the consumer demand. And so I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we have a good recovery going on here. We have consumers. We have people out there buying more product, buying more services, and that's expanding the economy. It's expanding jobs. And what we want to do with this job credit is create the environment that's supportive of that, and to make sure that the in this especially delicate recovery, that with the jobs being as slow as they are, that's the area we really wanted to encourage, and we wanted to promote growth. But obviously, the growth comes from the private sector.
Absolutely, agree.
Senator Howe, you're going to get another shot at this at tax committee, right?
Well, I just got a quick question off of his elementary math.
Okay, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going off of Senator Lilly's elementary math, how did you arrive at the $50,000 mark for maximum credit?
Mr. Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, it was really a kind of a numbers game, and if you look at the $3,000 credit, it's about 16 jobs. What we were trying to do was to make sure that large companies didn't take all of the credit. We wanted to make sure that small businesses had the same opportunity for the credit. So the idea was to make sure that we want a job is a job, and if an employer hires one of these groups, an unemployed veteran, someone who's unemployed, or a recent grad, and they qualify the credit, we wanted to make sure that they got the credit for that job. So the governor was very clear that a job is a job, and we really want to increase that. But the idea was, well, let's just make sure that it gets spread out around the economy as much as possible. So that was where that thought came in, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Howe, every time you speak and every time Senator Tomassoni speaks, I want you to apologize to Senator Sieben.
Okay.
Because we're making them.
Sorry about that, Senator Sieben. But I guess if we're throwing numbers around, Mr. Chair, if we're throwing numbers around, it looks like we just plugged a figure in there of 50,000, because you can't get to 50,000. It'd either be 49.5 or it'd be 48,000 if we're looking at 16 equivalent. And that's my point, is it looks like it was just thrown in there. And 16 FTEs is quite a lot. That's quite a lot if you're looking to spur. This looks like you're looking for a brand new business or something. I would just appreciate, when we look at the numbers, that it makes sense, because that number isn't divisible by 3,000 or 1,500. So it's just a number that appears to be plucked out of the thin air and put in there, and I would just want it to make sense to me. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stevens is going to thank me, because if Senator Lilly is agreeing with Senator Kelesh and with myself, I think it's time for Senator Metzen to move the bill.
You weren't here at the front end of this, so we're going to hear all of these bills today, and then we're going to try to figure out what we can build on in a bipartisan way. So we're not going to take any action today. So I would like to call up at this time Senator Sieben and Senator Eaton, and I'll let and as they're coming up,
Mr. Chair,
if they'd both join us, Commissioner Franz, for a final thought here.
Well, we did have a small business person who didn't want to testify really quick.
I want to take open open testimony after we've had all these bills presented, okay?
Thank you very much.
Chairman, might I just conclude by saying I'm a little bit more optimistic than Senator Torres Ray on this. I think this committee is here with an open mind. Again, we're one state. We have to work together, and so I'm optimistic that you folks, some of the discussion, I think, was very positive. So, Senator Torres Ray, I hope you were off a little bit on that.
I hope so, too.
And I know you hope so,
too. Believe me.
For your listening to us.
Great job pinch hitting, too. Great job.
Thank you very much.
And so maybe, and I know Mr. Phillips is going to stay with us, so... And Senator Metzen, you can take any chair you want, of course. You
probably
can
go back by Lily up there.
So, Senator Sieben, thank you for
Senator
your...
Senator Willie's really coming around.
You're rubbing off on him.
She's kicking me out, too.
Senator Sieben, thank you for your patience. You heard all that discussion, and we have a committee that's eager to work on this together. So ask you to go over your piece of legislation, which is Senate File 1778, and I know Commissioner Phillips is going to share some things with us as well. So, Senator Sieben, welcome to the Jobs Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill here today. Senate File 1778 is really quite simple. It's a $10 million appropriation for the Minnesota Investment Fund. And as I'm sure all the committee members here know, Minnesota Investment Fund has been an important financing tool for over 25 years here in the state of Minnesota. It was first administered by then Commissioner of Economic Development Mark Dayton, and it's an important tool the state can use to help incentivize businesses to expand here in Minnesota. Other states, as you are aware, are offering business capital to invest in their states, and this $10 million would be a shot in the arm for Minnesota's program. As you also know, there was $3 million appropriated to the fund in the 2011 special session. So some of the results of that investment I can speak to just briefly, and the commissioner can expand on. But $1.57 million was awarded to expanding businesses, leveraging $31 million in investment and 228 new jobs in Minnesota. I've been told there are 16 additional projects in the pipeline that will create a net total of 1,800 jobs in the state. Like I said, the bill is simple in that it makes no changes to the program. It just appropriates an additional $10 million. It's obviously administered by deed, and grants are given to cities that are then awarded to local businesses, often in the form of forgivable loans. So, Commissioner Phillips, if you'd like to speak, and then we also have a testifier, Aaron Beckman, from the city of Ramsey, who'd like to add some more.
Mr. Beckman, why don't you come to the table? Commissioner Phillips, please, to this particular piece of legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that this will require. I think many members are very familiar with the Minnesota Investment Fund, so I won't go on and on, but it's our most effective tool we have. If I said we had any real priority at deed as far as this legislative session, it's because on any given day, we are in discussions with businesses and communities on projects where we have more money than we have in the Minnesota Investment Fund literally on the table in discussion. Obviously, we don't, until we have a real deal, we don't go to a move to approval. So I don't want to say we're putting the money out at risk or anything, but in discussion purposes. So... And frankly, the other fact I'd just like to point out is the world is getting more and more competitive. You know, again, I like to give anecdotes. I know some people think these stories go on and on, but I'll be very brief. Right now, I'm dealing with a publicly traded company that has operations in New York, Ohio, and Minnesota. And they are very pleased with their Minnesota operation, and they'd like to move some of the work that's being done at all three locations to Minnesota, some parts of their operation. And, of course, there's this East Coast state who brought out the checkbook and said, we'll write a check for $25 million for a couple hundred jobs. And I believe the company is sincere. I think the reason they're moving the jobs to Minnesota is because of our workforce, and it's a great place to do business. It's a great place. I believe the culture of the company is better in Minnesota than it is in some of their other locations. But they are a publicly traded company, so that the CEO and the board of directors has to take seriously when there's serious dollars put on the table. I've said this at committee hearings before. I don't think Minnesota has to have as big a checkbook to compete with other states, because we are very naturally competitive because of our educational system, because of our workforce development system. And there are a lot of reasons why Minnesota is very competitive, but not having any resources to compete with and make competing proposals. Some of the ones on your list here I could go through of where AGCO is on here in Jackson, Minnesota. We had $5 million on the table. The state of Georgia had $23 million on the table. We won. We wouldn't have won if we had zero on the table, just so be clear about that. So these resources are our most important things. And we don't know where the projects. We have a pipeline of projects, I'd say 20 or 30 projects that are in some form or fashion that we're aware of, where companies are considering multiple locations. Some are big companies, some are little companies, some are rural, some are urban. We spend this money all over the state of Minnesota. So I'll entertain questions, but I just want to be clear. This is one of our top priorities.
Let's go to Mr. Beckman then on this bill.
Mr. Chair, my name is Aaron Beckman. I'm the Economic Development Marketing Manager for the city of Ramsey. I've also worked for the cities of Moundsview and Windham. I've had about 17 years of experience in terms of economic development, most of which in Minnesota. I have also served 7 years in terms of the EDAM Economic Development Association of Minnesota Legislative Committee. As a member of EDAM, I wholeheartedly support this bill, the MIF appropriation. This program works. EDAM strongly supports the $10 million request. This program is part of our 2012 legislative policy. Each year we come out with a new policy, and it's been on that program for on that policy for several years. As an economic developer, I can attest to the program's effectiveness and value. This program was used to assist PM Beef, a meatpacking plant in Windham, to expand. As a result, PM added more than the jobs that it promised. It promised 200, more than 300 were added. It currently has 720 employees in that particular community, and it's its largest employer there. This program was used to assist Vision Ease Lens in the city of Ramsey, as it is an optical lens manufacturer headquartered in Ramsey. The MIF program allowed the company to set up a state-of-the-art facility. It became our city's largest employer there, with operations around the world. I would encourage the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee to approve this bill. This is an important economic development tool, one that works both in the metro area and greater Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Beckman. So for the commissioner and perhaps for Senator Sieben, the author, just to be clear, this $10 million request is not funded. It's not funded by the earlier bill we heard.
Mr. Chairman, this is not funded by that, but the governor's office assured me that he will be making a proposal to fund this.
Okay, so there's going to be some kind of a supplemental.
There will be some kind of supplemental legislation introduced.
Good news for you, Senator Sieben. Good news. Members, I'd like to bring up Senator Eaton then, unless there's more discussion or questions on this particular. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to express my strong support for this bill, Senator Sieben. I think that I have been participating in numerous conversations about really the need to expand this fund and how important it is for multiple business in multiple areas of the state, rural, suburban, cities, very diverse communities. Commissioner, and I commend you for really having meetings throughout the state with very diverse groups. I have been part of, you know, your meetings with minority communities and companies and organizations that work with minority-owned and women-owned business. So I think that this is critical for the state of Minnesota, and I really applaud the governor's effort, Senator Stevens' effort to really work on this. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one quick
question. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I should point out that the Minnesota Investment Fund is a revolving loan fund for most of the business monies that are given out here. So this $10 million will get used over and over and over again if it gets paid back, and it can be used for other businesses. So the fact of the matter is that we probably need to put way more than $10 million into this fund. We should probably put $50 or $100 million into it, because if you do want to compete with other states and you're serious about competing with other states, we need to have incentives available.
Senator Thomas, I look forward to hearing your $50 to $100 million
answer to how you pay for all that. But Commissioner Phillips, were you going to respond to Senator Thompsoni, or you don't have to?
Well, no, I want to clarify something, because we make loans. We have the ability to forgive part of them. So I'll give you an example. Very often, and there's limits. Obviously, we have a limit of $1 million per project. And sometimes projects are very large, and that's very modest compared to our competition. So we use these resources very carefully. But we do have the ability to forgive part of the loans based on the company's performance on creating jobs. So although we do, some of the money is coming back, it's not a purely revolving loan fund. Because sometimes, again, to provide the incentive that our competition is, we have to forgive part of the loan. So just want to clarify that.
Chair Keeler.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I think there's not a whole lot more testimony we need in this. I'm just wondering if we can't try to move this into the Finance Committee.
Bill too.
I understand that, but I'm just, with this bill, do we really need to bring it back to this committee instead of sending it on to the Finance Committee?
I don't know if you're here at the front end.
I was. But
what I'd like to do is figure what we could build together. These are at least the building blocks that the governor and the administration are coming forward with. And I think it's a good start.
Okay. I just thought maybe it'd move this particular portion that seems to be.
Well, it sounds like we need to wait for the governor's going to come out with a supplemental, too, Senator Kielash, to talk about how to pay for it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that would be the Finance Committee, though, wouldn't it?
I mean, I think you'd want to hear it, though. Yeah. I think we'd want to hear it. So thank you, Senator Sieben, and thank you, Commissioner Phillips and Mr. Beckman. So, Senator Eaton, if you could join us at the table, and thank you for your patience, and we'll. We have no trouble going a little over time here. Make sure we give you a chance to fully present your piece of legislation. And we'll give the microphone over to you then. Senator Eaton, Senate File 1751. This is the fast track proposal, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good guy.
I guess I'd like to present that this will serve like 3,000 adults, and the hope is that 2,200 will be placed into employment. And the thing I like about this myself is that we have all these different agencies working together. We have the educational and the businesses and the adult basic education of people all working together. And we're seeing results. People are getting jobs, and they're filling skilled positions that the businesses aren't able to fill in our community. That and so we're working directly with the businesses to fill these.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. And before I turn to you, Commissioner Phillips, I also have the name down of Ann, is it Leland, as the Fast Track Project Director. And I don't know if you're going to testify, if you could, snuggle a chair up next to Commissioner Phillips, and we'll keep going here. So, Commissioner Phillips, you're up next.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't know if you recall my testimony last year where I said very quickly we may be moving from high unemployment to where are the workers, and that's what's happening. As you can see, our unemployment rate's dropping. We have companies complaining that they can't find workers with the right skills. And what research tells us that by 2018, 70% of Minnesota jobs will require education beyond a high school level. And we call this a credential. So it might be a certificate of some kind. It might be a two-year associate degree. It might be a four-year college degree. But all the jobs, or at least 70% of the jobs in the future, are going to require these kinds of credentials. Yet today, in Minnesota, only about 40% of our adult working age population have post-secondary degrees. And Minnesota employers need skilled workers. And so we've been working for a couple of years now on a pilot program called Fast Track. And it is really a career pathways project. It's been primarily funded through our department, but also through philanthropic contributions from the federal government and the Joyce Foundation. And the program really focuses on a partnership. And it's a partnership with the Department of Education's Adult Basic Education, which I'll have somebody speak to about their participation, with the Minnesota College and University System and DEED, and from the private sector, from the United Way of Minnesota. And so these local fast-track efforts target industries that are important to local and regional economies. And by addressing the local skills gap, fast-track programs work as effective supply chains for employers needing skilled labor. The demand for skills from employers is growing nationwide, and Minnesota leads the nation in the percentage of jobs requiring some of these post-secondary skills, as I mentioned. I might have both my partners from the Adult Basic Ed and DEED talk specifically about the points in the bill. You want to introduce yourself?
I will. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barry Schaefer. I'm the State Adult Basic Education, ABE, Director with the Minnesota Department of Education.
Mr. Schaefer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I typically present to members on the education committees. It's the first time I've ever presented to the jobs committee. And I think that I'm thrilled to be here because I want to give you the message that adult basic education in Minnesota is not just an education issue. It is a jobs economic growth issue, and that's what Fast Track has shown me over the last 6 years. I'm the co-lead of the Fast Track Project Initiative in Minnesota, have been for the past 6 years. It started under the Pawlenty administration, and it's going through the Dayton administration now. I co-lead with my colleague from the Office of the Chancellor, Karen Hynek, who's also in the audience today. This state has two unacceptable gaps. One is the achievement gap, which you know about. Adult basic education has a role in that. We're kind of the recovery effort for the achievement gap in the K-12 system. The other unacceptable gap, Commissioner Phillips mentioned, is the skills gap, where 70% of the jobs in a recent study in Minnesota in 2018 will require a college credential. Right now, we're at about 40% of our working adults having these credentials. So the ABE population of adults that do not have high school equivalency or English competencies are a ripe working group, client group, for this jobs and economic tool in the toolbox called the Fast Track Program. If you're interested in any of these three things I'm going to mention, which I think you are, I will testify that the Fast Track Program is a great solution for them, for these, as at least a part of the solution. One, if you're interested in government agencies working better together collaboratively, Fast Track is doing that with a number of agencies, not just the three already mentioned, but also the TANF people at DHS and the private sector, in particular United Way organization. If you're interested in using limited resources for maximum output, we've shown that on the previous Fast Track clients a tremendous success rate in getting folks credentialed and into jobs, much more than any known program in Minnesota has accomplished. In fact, we're a national model now for something called the Adult Career Pathway Initiative nationally. And finally, if you're interested in more quickly skilling up adults for in-demand jobs in Minnesota, jobs especially in the healthcare field, jobs also in technical fields of welding and industrial maintenance and other jobs where employers are actually saying in Minnesota, we do not have workers qualified to fill these entry-level certificated skilled jobs, fast track is an answer for you. So finally, I'll just say that we know the fast track model works. The last 3 years of full implementation, meaning on a competitive basis, we pulled state monies together and private monies and offered it competitively to colleges and ABE programs and the workforce system out there. We've seen tremendous results. So we know it works. We're looking for your support through this bill to officially authorize the fast track program, to put it in statute. We're also asking for an appropriation that would make it statewide. We think this program is deserving of having every citizen who needs to be skilled up at these entry-level career pathway jobs to have access within their local community. So that's why I fully support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. You've been pretty thorough.
Okay.
Have you been successful in finding dollars to fund this particular piece of legislation?
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have been successful to a limit. And when I say limited resources, over the past 3 years, we've been successful at pooling existing agency dollars and private funds, especially our WIA incentive monies, which we earn between DEED and adult basic education for meeting our federal performance objectives. So a lot of this is federal money, but it's grant money. It's soft money, so to speak. We've been each year pulling it together at the rate of about $1 million per year to offer competitive fast track models out there in across Minnesota. So,
well, let's hear then from Ms. Leland. You don't want us to hear from
me. No, my name is Anne-Marie Leland, and I also work at the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. I believe that Dr. Schaefer covered pretty much all of the points perfectly. We had kind of a last-minute change in terms of having him testify, so I will just defer to his points. Well made.
Mr. Chairman, I would make just a couple of more comments, if you'd allow. And members of the committee, the thing that I'd like to stress is that we piloted this and it worked. And now we'd like to roll it out statewide. Is it all the investment that this will require in the long term? Probably not. I just want to be clear about that. This is so we can put this in all the community and technical colleges. Is that
That's correct?
Yes,
correct.
That is correct.
So we're taking it now on a very narrow, we're broadening it to make sure it's available everywhere. We're going to continue tracking our success. We're tracking it with other programs. I'm trying to institute the fast track model in everything we do at DEED. So if we're offering a separate program, a federal program, using a career pathway, looking at intensive counseling and getting people credentialed, that's what DEED's going to be all about. We're putting that in our mission statement, our values, and our vision of the future at DEED. This is the way we're going to go, get people credentialed. That's the way that we're going to take care of the economy in Minnesota. So that's my commercial for this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Phillips. And then just a follow-up with you on this particular bill. This is, I think the fiscal note is talked about $4.5 million. So is this part of the DEED budget? Are you responsible for this, or how are you projecting to pay for this?
Mr. Chairman, this morning I heard from the governor's office, this along with the Minnesota Investment Fund, I believe they are looking to try to provide you with the information on how they would fund this.
So, Senator Metzen, if we just schedule a bill, then the governor finds a way to pay for it. This is good.
Great.
And so thank you, Mr. Schaefer and Ms. Leland. Senator Eaton, any further comments on this piece of legislation? I know it's something that the governor personally highlighted in his State of the State, so congratulations for carrying this.
Thank you. I'd just like to add that I think that this is what this session should be about, creating jobs in Minnesota. In the final 3 months of 2011, the job vacancies increased by over 47%. We have nearly 50,000 vacancies, and I'm hearing from businesses that a lot of these they're not able to fill because we don't have the skill sets.
So, members, I see you all juggling your papers. I do have one other person who's asked to testify, if as many of you could stay as possible. I have Mr. I'm going to get it wrong. Clark, I think it's Dierts, and I think. Please, if you could join us, Mr. Dierts, and I believe this is on the SCOE/Metzen bill.
And if there's anyone else from the, in the audience today.
I was leaving.
Mr. Chair, don't leave yet. It's your bill.
Well, he's coming up. Mr. Chair, well, he's coming up. Are we hanging on to the paperwork for next week?
Please
We're
do.
Bringing this up again next session. So, okay, just double-checking on that. Thanks.
Mr. Dietz, thank you for your patience. We wanted to get all these bills onto the table. As you saw, we had a lot of testifiers. So, please, welcome to the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. And tell us which piece of these you wanted to testify to.
Yeah, I'm going a little bit of background. Appreciate the chairman and all of you taking time here to spend some time through lunch. I hope I don't ruin your lunch. A little bit of my background.
Could you just give your full name for the
My name is Clark Dierks, D-I-R-C-Z. I'm the CEO of a company called Axonom. What we are is a global provider of e-revenue transactions for complex high-tech businesses. We have 12 semiconductor companies, some of the largest companies in the world, some of the largest companies in Minnesota, run our software over the internet to manage all of their essentially complex e-commerce transactions. It's what we do. All of our products are built in Minnesota, which is very rare. I'm also a CPA. I spent 15 years in practice, understand the Minnesota and federal tax laws extremely well. We have been able to thrive here because of one reason, and I will come back to some of this. The reason we've been able to thrive in this community is because of the educational system that was created many years ago. I graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1975. It's getting back there a little bit. When I graduated from college, it cost me $300 a quarter to go to the University of Minnesota. I was able to work part-time at Northwest Bank, as it was called back then, and was able to graduate from college debt-free. All right. My opinion on this as an owner of a company that employs very highly paid people in this state is that there is a you're leading into what I would call the third or fourth leg of what Minnesota needs to do to survive. We need to get back to building intellectual capital-based businesses in this state. Those are built by the education system and keeping smart people here. I was brought here to testify a bit to the importance of this tax credit. I applaud one of the members who pulled out a calculator, and I can inform you of two things. A, that's very good because I think there's far less interest in actually getting down to the bottom of the math of some of these things as compared to the emotional impact of some of these issues. The type of employees that we hire in this state, if we get a $3,000 credit or a $1,500 credit for hiring them, it will do one thing. It will pay to educate them, and I think that's a very key thing. When you're taking people at the margin, out of school, et cetera, there were some good questions about how do you know whether you're getting, you know, the best employee. The important point is you do not need to know you're going to be getting the best employee possible because there are a lot of qualified people in these groups. Now, will it make a difference for us hiring here or elsewhere? Probably not. However, on my desk this morning before I got here, I received my reminder letter from the state of California to apply for the jobs credits for the 14 new jobs we created in California in the last 2 years. When I indicated that, okay, so it is going to make a difference to me on the margin. None of us is going to hire that best employee anyway, all right? So it's not a matter of whether we made a mistake by putting somebody through that credit. I think this is a very good proposal. It's a simple tax proposal. It will cost nothing. If you get that calculator out for the type of people we hire, they make an excess in $75,000 a year within 3 years after working for us. Just hit it with the effective tax rate. This costs nothing. I have a letter on my desk from California rewarding us for the people that we've hired in that state. I want to bring up one other issue of, so I think these things are important. They're important from a competitive standpoint. I think that you can easily get caught in a race to the bottom on these tax expenditures. As an example, let's just drop all taxes in the state of Minnesota right now. you will knock the fourth leg of our economy out forever because the infrastructure of the state has been in decline for 10 years as an employer here. As I mentioned, the cost of education, the cost of training people, there is not zero cost to this. It is something that is required to build the intellectual capital that will create the jobs that I believe we want. When I was a tax specialist, I must have done over 1,000 tax returns for farmers. We're not creating any more farmland in the state. Now, we have to really take a good look around and ask what kind of jobs you're going to create. Even if you create, by the way, an environment in which there are no business taxes in this state, you will not attract one employer to this state because of that. I'll give you an example of the things that we compete with. All right, most of our employment is going on in California, by the way. Who are we competing with? Global software companies. Most of the competition we have, 95% of it, is located in higher tax states than Minnesota. As noted by the Wall Street Journal, over the last 5 years, the amount of funding that's going into funding companies for growth in the United States, of the top, they track 15,000 venture capital funded companies every year through that esteemed liberal publication, the Wall Street Journal. And one of the things you will notice there is that of the top 50 rated, 97% of them are located, that got the biggest amounts of funding, are located in higher tax states than Minnesota. Why? Because they have a base of intellectual capital, of well-trained people that thrive in that culture. That's why people go to those states, okay? By the way, one of the other things that they note is the submission of somebody getting on a board of directors. The 26th factor that boards of directors look at when they're locating businesses is taxation. If there is no demand, if there is no educational system, if we do not continue to grow the type of employee that I believe I was, you might as well turn out the lights. All right? In the last 5 years, there have been 60,000 high-tech businesses that we sell into created in the United States. 60,000. 97% of them were funded outside the state of Minnesota. 97% of them were funded in higher tax states outside the state of Minnesota. All right, it's just something to keep in mind. Now, we are here because we have dealt with the benefit of having that education system and that intellectual capital base, which is what is going to grow the jobs that we all want to have in the future. This tax credit, I appreciate all of you doing it. It's minor, but it has to be there because, again, we get letters from a competitive standpoint, and it's one of them just showed up on my desk this morning. Is it going to drive my decision? No. But I will finish by saying that of those 60,000 businesses that are high-tech targets, and we're talking companies like Google, Facebook, Dell Compellent, Johns Tech International, semiconductor manufacturers, fewer than 300 of them were created in the state of Minnesota. So I think this should be a no-brainer. As far as getting that tax credit through, it's not going to be a substantial benefit to my business, but I think it does show that you're taking the appropriate first steps to go the right direction here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dirks, for your testimony. Not seeing anyone else wishing to testify at this point and being a little over our allotted time, I thank particularly Ms. Thunheim, Commissioner Phillips, and the rest of the administration. I think this is a good discussion today. Thank you, Senator Metzen, again. Committee's adjourned.
Thank you.